You can't wear white shoes after Labor Day.
That's not true anymore.
Yes, it is. Didn't your mother ever tell you? Now you know.
No, please. Fashion has changed.
No, it hasn't.
And that was a clip from the movie Serial Mom, directed by our guest today. Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And today I'm joined by a legendary filmmaker, author, and raconteur. His books include Shock Value, Crackpot, Liar Mouth, and Carsick, John Waters' Hitchhikes Across America. And his films include Pink Flamingos, Desperate Living, Hairspray, and Serial Mom. He'll be in Portland at the Aladdin Theater on April 13th for Going to Extremes, a John Waters 80th birthday celebration. John Waters, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you.
So, John, you love to travel the country, maybe not so much thumbing a ride anymore like you did for your book Carsick, but you do tour an awful lot, and your latest tour is all about you turning 80.
80 years old. I did 59 shows on the road last year,
wow,
including my Christmas tour. So I'm like a teenage punk rock band, only I stay in better hotels. So I'm always on the road, and I kind of enjoy it. I'm always in touch with my audience. They get dressed for me. I have great audience. They're smart. They get dressed. They're all types of people. They don't fit in with their own minorities. They get along great. So and Portland's always been a great place for me. So my 80th birthday, yeah, whoever thought, no one ever imagines they're going to be 80 years old. But I've been telling people I'm 85, and people say, you look good.
Well, you know, much like Martin Scorsese and Ridley Scott, you're still pitching movies. You put together a script for a film version of your novel, Liar Mouth.
Yep, and it got far. I mean, the company bought it. They optioned the book. I wrote the script. They liked the script. Aubrey Plaza was going to star in it, and now nobody would give us the money because it's an expensive movie to make. If you read the book, it's got a main character, special effects. It's a road movie. But who knows? It might get made someday. You never know. I had another movie, Fruitcake, that was a children's Christmas movie that almost got made several times. So I write books, I do shows, I just tell stories, and I've got many different ways to do it.
Okay, Hollywood is not giving you the money. Have you thought of going like the European route?
Wait a minute, Hollywood gave me the money. They paid me quite well to write the script of Liar Mouth, and they optioned the book. That was two Hollywood paychecks.
Uh-huh. So it just was the production amount that wasn't
doing that didn't great. Get. I didn't get all paid right to direct it. I got paid to write it.
You do TV. You did a television series, John Waters Presents Movies That Will Corrupt You. And
I did. And then I'm in a lot of other shows. I do voiceover work all the time for animation.
I heard. And tell us about this anthology, this horror anthology that's very loyal to your hometown of Baltimore. It's called...
I did it because it was, you know, young kids making up sort of the Rod Serling part. I haven't seen the movie. I have no idea. I just know my parts. I'm also in a big new show with Aubrey Plaza, producer. I play a cat. I do Disney cartoons all the time. Because I was a puppeteer when I was young, I can do voices. So I just want to be in Toy Story. That's my goal.
Wow. Toy Story. That would be...
The biggest budget animated movie. That's why I want to be in it.
You know, puppeteers are cool. You've seen that Wayne White documentary, Beauty is Embarrassing.
No, I haven't. But all film directors were puppeteers. They all were. And actors to the day say to you, we're not your puppets, you know, but we all know they are.
Well, if you'll indulge me, how do you feel about taking a stroll down memory lane?
Sure. Okay, I can still remember it. Yeah, while I still can remember, yeah.
Okay, so you're heading into your ninth decade, but while you were still a teenager, you picked up a camera, you know, one of those 16-millimeter handheld rigs?
No, wait. It was before that. It was 8-millimeter. My grandmother gave it to me.
Oh.
My first two movies were shot in 8-millimeter, not Super 8. They didn't even have Super 8 then.
A Hag in a Black Leather Jacket was 1964?
That was 8-millimeter.
Oh, wow.
8-millimeter, yeah.
And then you hooked up with, well, for your first several films, you had a regular repertory company of actors. The famous Divine, of course, but also Mink Stole, David Lockery, Edith Massey, Mary Vivian Pierce.
Yeah, they were in all my movies right up to the end. When they were alive, they were up into my Hollywood movies too. I stuck with them through the very beginning. Yeah, I like that. Audience likes to grow old with your characters when they come see your movie, and they've grown up with you with them in your movies. I think it's important.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Mink Stole at a screening here in Portland. What a sweet person. You know she had to be a good actress playing all those awful characters.
Oh, yeah, she's a really good actress, and she's touring right now with Peaches Christ. I think she might have just played there. I mean, she's on tour doing a show on stage with Peaches Christ. But Minx is still a great friend. I see her. She moved to L.A., so I don't see her quite as much. But she's great, and she's really good. Watch her in Serial Mom. That's her best performance, I think.
So you're still in Baltimore. You're still loyal to your hometown. And decades before the internet, you found your tribe. You hooked up with these fellow oddballs in your own hometown.
Yep, and they were from different. I mean, I've hooked up with the suburban upper middle class bad kids who wanted to run downtown and be beatniks, and we ran town, and then we met gay people, even though a lot of my friends were straight too, and we all hung around together. And then we met black kids, which even the black cops used to stop us and say, "This isn't Greenwich Village, you know. You can't all hang around like this." We just confused everybody, and then we developed a sense of humor. And I made the movies just still to this day, trying to think, what would my friends laugh at if they saw it today? That was always my test audience in my head.
You put your actors through the paces a lot. Pink Flamingos was filmed in the dead of winter, and you had people running around, you know, shirtless and all.
Yeah, well, we just had to make the movies we did. I mean, at the time, we filmed it in winter because that's when we got the money. And in the summer, it would be worse. It's 120 degrees. That would be even worse. I like cold weather. It gives you a facelift. You don't need as much makeup.
Yeah, and your film, one of your early films, Female Trouble, inspired the critic Rex Reed to write, "Where do these people come from? Where do they go when the sun goes down? Isn't there a law or something?"
Of course, we put that right on the poster. My favorite one was in Desperate Living. The New York Times critic, Janet Maslin, said, "You could look far and wide to find a film uglier, but really, why would you?" And we put that in the ads, too.
Didn't you have kind of a feud with Rex Reed for a while?
Well, Rex Reed, he always hated me. And so we would put his quotes in all my ads always. And then I was at the Tennessee Williams Film Festival in New Orleans, and he was there and he tried to hang around with us. And we ditched him.
So tell us about the horror anthology Baltigore.
Well, I don't know much about it. I haven't even seen it, really. So I just was in it. And they just released a poster and I'm on it. But I'm kind of like the Rod Serling character in it that introduces all the stories. I haven't seen the movie, so I can't tell you anything about it, except it was made locally and I liked how they approached me. And it was kind of like when I tried to get somebody to be in my early movie. So sometimes I say yes to that. And then I say yes to big Hollywood shows and TV shows too. I mean, Law and Order.
And like you said, you do have an animated movie coming up. You're playing a cat, is that right?
Yes, in a whole series on Amazon that Aubrey Plaza, it's her show, and yes, I play a cat, yes. I play animation characters all the time, yeah.
So I'm wondering, how did you meet William S. Burroughs? He's the one who anointed you the Pope of Trash.
He was, and I just went to the funeral of his good friend, James Grauerholz. I was one of the speakers with Patti Smith, and it was kind of moving because I met him during the punk years. James Grauerholz sort of reinvented William as in the punk world, which gave him a whole completely new career. And I met him through that, and we met readings, and I went to the bunker. I went to his place. I'd look in his bedroom and see he was reading the Guyana Massacre. And I always loved William Burroughs. So to meet him was, and then for him to call me the Pope of Trash was like God himself coming down and anointing me. So William was great. I visited their home in Lawrence, Kansas when they lived there. And I've done my show in Lawrence, Kansas several times, which was the home of William Burroughs for the last 10 years of his life easily.
Great college town.
Yeah. Good writing school.
So what do you think of the kids these days making films? They're not even films anymore, making content on their mobile devices.
Good for you. The same way, if I was young, I would have made Hagging a Black Leather Jacket on my cell phone. It would have been a lot easier. And now they have so many special effects they can do themselves. They don't need to learn how to do opticals or anything. So it's the same way. You make a film as cheaply as you can with the new technology when you have it. So I think it's great they do that.
So you have other projects in the works that might be something that that you could do, like as an 80-year-old director?
Well, certainly I never would do a movie I didn't write. So no, I have those two movies I try to get made. I'll do another book. I've written lots and lots of books, and they're all still in print. They do quite well. They get translated all over the world to different languages. I have lots of different projects. I have more jobs than I've ever had in my entire life. I host big punk rock festivals. I'm busy constantly. I'm scheduled for the next 2 years already.
Are you still teaching a film appreciation class for maximum security prisoners in Maryland?
Not anymore. I miss jail. I miss that. I still visit a few people in jail, and I've helped people get out of jail, but I'm not doing that now. No, it would be almost impossible. The jails today are way less likely to do that kind of thing. No, they don't do that these days.
So this was Patuxent Institution, and all the inmates were considered emotionally disturbed. How did you connect with them?
Well, they felt like I was one of them. And they kept saying, "You're allowed to show us your movies," when they saw them. Who let you in here? They would say. But then I taught at the penitentiary too. I showed movies. I taught in a lot of prisons. And I don't know. I just thought it was amazing when I would walk in that Maryland penitentiary, which is pretty scary, with just carrying my 16-millimeter projector, looking like I do. And only thing one guy said to me, "Hey, you got a little sugar in you?" And I didn't know what that meant. I thought they want a candy bar. And I get what you mean. Yes, yes. And everybody just started laughing.
Tell us a little bit about the show that's coming up. It's going to be at the Aladdin Theater on Monday, April 13th. What are you going to tell people? What are you going to show people?
Well, it's like a sermon. It's like a church service. It's a religious service. Maybe I'll get you to levitate at the end. Talk about being old. Talk about love. Talk about movies. Talk about politics. Talk about everything. I write a completely new show once a year. It's completely new. But that becomes a Christmas show, partly the birthday show. And it is definitely a monologue that's really, I think, self-help, and it's like a preacher ranting. I want people to start chanting, and like a tent revival.
Nice. Well, Portland isn't quite as weird as it used to be. How is Baltimore holding up? Baltimore has a reputation for just kind of being hard to control.
Well, it was Baltimore always. The politicians always say, "What could we do?" I said, "Put a bumper sticker out that says The Wire." It's still like that. Baltimore and Portland, you got lots of trouble. You got Portland's in the news a lot. You like politically unrest, all that kind of stuff is great, because the Trump goes crazy about that. And then he says Baltimore was rats and roaches. As soon as he said that, I was on every TV show the next day saying that Ricky Lake kicked a rat off her shoe when she got her first kiss in Hairspray, and wore a roach dress when she won the Miss Auto Show contest. So we celebrate what others may use against us. And I believe Portland probably does that too.
Well, we've got frogs and chickens and unicorns.
Yeah. Well, it's like Iceland. They believe in fairies there too. So who knows? I believe in every local custom.
Well, you mentioned The Wire. Homicide was another TV show that was filmed in Baltimore, but you were before that. You were before Barry Levinson, any of the big budget films that came along with the Baltimore Film Office.
Yes, I was. But they were always supportive. I mean, the center board hated me, but Mayor Schaefer said, "I don't know what these movies are you make, but keep making them." They didn't care as long as it pushed Baltimore. So yes, the Baltimore Center Board would always get me national publicity because she hated my movie so much. And she would always say things like, "Don't tell me about sex. I was married to an Italian." She said that to me.
Nice. You know, I put on Pink Flamingos when I was running a film program at the University of Oregon, and it was still, like, decades later, it was still freaking people out.
It's worse now. You're not allowed to say happy birthday, fatso. Like, now you can say the F word on network television, but you can't say fat on public TV.
Divine really paved the way for characters like Walter White. She was competing for filthiest person alive, But she had style where the other people didn't in the movie. So you're rooting for her and her family.
You're rooting for her because she's confident. She was minding her own business. The marbles were jealous. They were judgmental. They were really filthier. They did way worse stuff than Devon did. Stealing babies and stuff is worse than eating shit. Definitely.
So what do you think about you're becoming sort of a respected figure in
no,
the American
I said
film industry?
When I had my big show at the Academy Museum last year, I said, I'm so respectable, I could puke. Really, I am. But that's great. It's exciting. I'm glad I'm alive to see it. And I accept it with no irony. I think it's wonderful. The Pink Flamingos somehow got named by the government of the registry of a great American movie. That is astounding to me. I'm trying to picture the screening when they were watching it, when they decided that. Was it the singing anus? I'm trying to think, what could it have been that made them make that final decision?
Now let's play a clip from the movie Cry Baby.
Strip down, asshole. It's Betty by time. Hmm? Now, don't forget to say your prayers. God bless my probation officer.
God bless my probation officer.
God bless the draft board.
God bless the draft board.
God bless the juvenile authorities.
God bless the juvenile authorities.
We're going to give you a haircut tomorrow, pretty boy. You ever hear of a whiffle? Well, that's what you're going to get, you big old crybaby, you.
God bless Dwight Eisenhower.
God bless Dwight Eisenhower.
God bless Roy Cohn.
God bless Roy Cohn.
God bless Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon.
Nighty night, boys.
That was a clip from the movie Cry Baby, directed by our guest today. You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we're talking with filmmaker, author, and raconteur John Waters. His films include Multiple Maniacs, Female Trouble, Polyester, Cry Baby, and Cecil B. Demented. He'll be in Portland at the Aladdin Theater on April 13th for Going to Extremes, a John Waters 80th birthday celebration. You know, back in the 80s, I saw an interview David Letterman did with you. I wish I had a recording of it. You tell Dave about getting into town back into Baltimore from a tour and hopping in a cab. And the cabbie says to you something like, how about them birds? And your response was along the lines of, well, I assume he was talking about the Orioles, but why would I be interested? Do I ask him about the films of Fassbinder?
Well, it's true. Just because I'm a man, why do you assume that I would follow that? The same way I don't assume that you would have my interest. I still feel that way. And sometimes in Baltimore, I have a purple scarf, and I wore it recently. People said, yeah, I feel the same way about the Ravens. I said, oh, my God, they think I'm a Ravens fan because it's purple, so I can never have to put the scarf away and take it to another city. Not that I'm against the Ravens, but I particularly don't follow them, but I'm not against people that do or anything. But at the same time, I do resent it when someone, because I'm a man, thinks that we have that in common.
It's presumptuous.
Yes, it is.
Well, you're a big fan of Christmas.
Well, I'm a big fan of the excess of Christmas.
Right.
Now it affects people. I mean, I'm like a drag queen on Halloween. If it's Christmas, I'm always working. I feel like Johnny Mathis and I will be the last two people doing a Christmas circuit. But still, I do actually like it in real life. But then when I'm touring, I kind of, you know, I'm doing 18 cities in 23 days, so I think, oh, God, it really is Christmas. I have to go Christmas shopping. You know, I keep thinking it as material rather than an event that I, too, have to participate in.
Well, when I think of Christmas, okay, I think of the pinnacles of Western art, like Bruegel and Botticelli and Handel, and then also the most outrageous kitsch, like animatronic elves and reindeer and light-up snowmen. But these days, if you go into any museum, the mashup of high and low art is all the rage. But 50 or more years ago, this was just something you and your friends were doing, instinctively, at Little Dreamland Studios in Baltimore, mashing up high and low art.
Well, I think that is true. We were trying to make exploitation films for art theaters, and I think I succeeded in that. And I always was embarrassed. My films did not play in real grindhouses and drive-ins. They didn't work. They'd play them, and audience would hate them because they didn't want irony in their films. When people saw Wes Meyer's real audience, they thought those films were really sexy. They didn't think they were funny. The early horror movies and the gore movies, they thought they were scary. Nobody was laughing. It was later when hipsters and intellectuals laughed. And that was why in Pecker I had a toast to the end of irony, because in a way, irony is snobbery.
Right. I mean, it's true. People look at the special effects that were done a few years ago like there's something to be ashamed of, and then they look at the effects that were done 100 years ago, back in the 19-teens and 20s, as if they were wonderful and groundbreaking. It's pretty strange.
I asked a child when I was trying to make conversation about movies we were talking about. I said, did you like The Wizard of Oz? And he said, no, basically, it was just walking. And I thought, oh my God, that's such a great answer. But yes, today, the effects in The Wizard of Oz are pitiful to a young person.
Well, I just want to mention, your books include Shock Value, Role Models, Carsick, and Crackpot. My mom gave me a copy of Crackpot years and years ago for Christmas, and I immediately flipped to the chapter where the Christmas tree has just fallen on your grandmother.
Right.
And it's a weirdly atavistic scene. You write about how gleeful this made you, just dancing and...
Well, I talk about that in my Christmas show. And basically, from touring with the Christmas show, many people have told me about their horrible stories of Christmas trees falling over in their house. And it is generally involves liquor or dogs and cats. And it happens really a lot. So I think you should rig your own tree to fall over. Then it's really exciting. Everybody can scream and laugh, and you can take pictures of everybody pinned under the tree. It's exciting.
Now, why don't you rig one on stage while you're there? I think
that'd
be good.
Yeah, they should.
I understand that that scene was the one that inspired the scene in your film Female Trouble. And Divine plays a character called Dawn Davenport, who's disappointed about not getting cha-cha heels for Christmas and knocks the tree over on her grandmother. So art imitates life.
I didn't knock it over on my grandmother, but it did fall on her. She thought it was funny later that I had used that as inspiration. But you know, one thing I'd like to settle, drag queens always think they know what cha-cha heels are, and a lot of times they have cha-cha heel contests. I've been when I appear. Cha-cha heels are not real high heels. That's a drag mistake. Cha-cha heels are short, squat, little heels. They're not high heels. So just I want to make sure that drag queens understand that.
Good for dancing.
Yes, or cha-cha. That's why they're called that. You could cha-cha in them.
Now, for those of us who grew up on advent calendars, I heard somewhere that you once made a custom version. Open each window of each day, and there's one of your heroes, Ramona Africa, James Baldwin, various characters.
Yes, that is true, yes. Don Knotts, Johnny Ray. Yes, I did do that. That was exciting. Every year I design a Christmas item that goes out. Matter of fact, I just signed all 2,000 of them. They're downstairs. I'm not going to tell you what it is. But every year I've done one for maybe 25 years at least. One year I had a clear plastic Christmas ball that had a plastic roach in it, and many people thought it was real when they opened the present because they would throw the ball and everything. So I had the advent calendar maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, John Waters, it's been a real thrill having you join us on K-Boo.
All right, I'm looking forward to coming to Portland, my 80-year-old self. Now I can say I'm going on 81. Remember when you were younger, you always tried to be older? So I can say now, how old are you? Going on 81.
Well, you'll still be 79 when you're at the Aladdin Theater on April 13th.
Yeah, I will be. You're right. I'll be going on 80 still. Yeah.
Still in your eighth decade.
Yeah.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about your work, where would they look?
My work? Oh, God, there's a million websites about me. None of them are official. I don't have a website. I want to be harder to reach. I don't want to give away my jokes for free. I never understand why people are on Instagram. They don't get paid. Well, I guess you can if you have enough followers, all that. Yeah. To me, you can find out easily about me. It's not hard to find out what I'm doing. Just Google me.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And my guest today has been filmmaker, author, and raconteur John Waters. His books include Shock Value, Crackpot, Liar Mouth, and Carsick, John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. And his films include Pink Flamingos, Desperate Living, Hairspray, and Serial Mom. Once again, John will be in Portland at the Aladdin Theater on April 13th for Going to Extremes, a John Waters 80th birthday celebration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture. Now let's go out with a song from the movie Hairspray.
From coast to coast.
Well, now form a big line. To the port. Everybody now
squish. Squash. Kill that rush.
Little bed of road upon my road. I'm gonna have to kill and can't stand it no more.
Thank you.